Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Live. This is the Gus Bradley Show. Gus Bradley Show. Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach. And we are also live, I guess, on Jaguars.com. Hello, everybody. All your fans, Gus, watching their home back in Minnesota, Jaguars.com. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I'm doing good.
Lodge. The tough game in San Diego. You know, me and you had talked earlier in the week. Really, all aspects. You know, this is kind of, you know, much like you have games where you feel like, okay, this is a shared victory. You have a shared defeat as well.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. You know, there was nothing pretty about it, and it makes for a tough couple days there when you're dealing with it and you're watching the tape and you're analyzing and you replay things back and forth in your mind. You know, how did this happen? How did it take place? And, you know, then you got to have the strength to move on and get the team ready to go. And fortunately, we got great guys in that locker room, great coaching staff that has really poured their heart and soul into getting back to where we need to be.
Yeah, I always say this to people is that sometimes when things look really good, you know, and then things look really bad, both instances, then you go back and you watch the tape. And if it's looked great on game day, you know, you watch the film, it's like, you know, it wasn't that good.
Right. I think sometimes you watch it and you always find out that there's some things you need to get worked on and, you know, and you write those things down. Then there's some things that you did pretty well that you can build on. And that's where it was tough in this game. There wasn't much to build on. But after you sit back and you go through it again, you look at some things. I mean, we saw individual performances. We talked before the show about some guys, you know, did a good job and did show up. And, you know, they know in that locker room there's some very good football players in there. We just didn't play up to our capabilities. And that's our job to play up to our capabilities. And now this week we got to get right.
Blake Bortles struggled, to say the least. Two interceptions, had the fumble. How is he doing mentally after a game like that? Because, you know, you sit there and you read this, and watch his press conferences on Jaguars.com or you read the clips, and he's taking ownership. I mean, he said, look, we can't be effective if the quarterback position plays like that. I have to be better.
Right. I think, you know, all of us take responsibility for this. Blake Bortles is a great leader. And I think you're seeing it firsthand when a guy takes responsibility and it didn't fall on his shoulders. You know, what's a great quarterback? What's he do? He deflects praise and accepts criticism. And, you know, he's just a quality guy, a quality competitive person. And that's why he's so well thought of in the locker room and by our coaching staff. He's the leader of our team and he knows our expectations. And when we don't reach him, he's disappointed and our whole team not reaching him. So, you know, what better guy to have lead our team than Blake Bortles?
You know, when you watch that game and you call the game like I was doing in the first couple series, you kind of had examples of how to do it, how not to do it. And San Diego was able to have very good balance on offense. Their rushing attack with Melvin Gordon was effective. The rushing attack that you guys had hasn't been able to be effective yet. You had 9 rushing attempts in the ball game, and I know that, you know, all offseason you guys had talked about how we want to be better in running the football, sets up play action. You know, we would be happy if Blake, you know, instead of throwing 35 touchdowns, maybe he had 20, 22. But then the interceptions get cut down, and right now you're just not getting it out of your running game.
Yeah, you know, it comes back to that. And we have to get that running game going. Now, we got behind early, but even when it was 7-0, we tried to get the run game going. We were off schedule. We had some 1st and 20s, 2nd and 20s, and that's not how you want to start the game. And if you look at the field position, our average starting field position in the first half was, I believe, like the 13 or 14 yard line. They were at the 47. And a good team like San Diego, you can't do that. And we got behind and, you know, we got away from our run game. We tried to start it up in the second half. But, you know, we're better than what we showed in San Diego, especially in our run game. And we got to get it going this week.
Allen Robinson faced a player that, and I think we talked about it this last week on the show, that Todd Walsh referred to Jason Verrett as an elite player, stud, I think might have been his terminology. And a very young player, third-year player out of TCU. And from watching him play Allen Robinson, and also he was on Allen Hurns a little bit, he is an elite player. But I was very surprised to see the San Diego Chargers, they put Jason Verrett on him, but then they would have a safety over the top.
Right. And some of it was just pre-snap. You know, they gave the illusion that, you know, there was a safety over top of him and you know, off of different looks. But he's a talented corner in the league. And, you know, they pride themselves on tight coverage. We had some opportunities. We had, you know, Allen Robinson got open a couple times. But, you know, we just missed the opportunities, or we had pressure, or for whatever reason. So we just need to be more consistent overall in our game. And, you know, it starts by being on schedule.
And on schedule, when you talk about on schedule and you talk about penalties, when you said about field position and also like the very first possession of the ball game, you got a false start. Now you go back to first and 15. Later on, you got a second and 10. You got another false start. You go back to second and 15. Is that what you're referring to staying on schedules, to not get into those long distance down situations, whether it be first down, second down, or third down, is just trying to avoid them?
Right. Well, you know, we had a couple of those situations in preseason where we were first and 20. And, you know, we got out of those situations, made a couple big plays, and got back on schedule. In this season, the regular season now, in those situations, we haven't proven. We haven't done it consistently enough to get out of it. And it all starts with just our focus. And whether it's anxiety in the beginning of the game, you know, lack of focus, whatever the case is, you know, I think we understand it as a coaching staff and as the players. However it happens, it's unacceptable. And there's going to be some penalties. We know that there's going to be aggressive penalties. But these foolish penalties that I've talked about, the offside, the ones that are under our control, that aren't aggressive-type penalties, you know, those are the ones that we really got to be mindful of.
Now, there was a couple plays in the game where I think a lot of fans might have a little bit of a misconception about. There was one instance where Paul Posluszny, I think it was on the touchdown to Tyrell Williams, where he's chasing him from inside out. People are like, man, Paz has got to cover that guy. And I'm going, I don't think that's the way the defense is designed. And there was another instance to where I think it was Travis Benjamin that runs a deep route and Paz is on him. That's not the way the defense is set up, where Paz is supposed to be on these guys all alone, is it? That's not the
Well, you know what? There's without getting too much into the scheme, there's times when you see linebackers and they've got to play a deep zone and, you know, stay underneath or even stay on top of a wide receiver. I mean, you see the old Tampa 2 where the mic is running down the middle mm-hmm. of the field and he has to stay on top. So you see that throughout the league where linebackers have it. The one instance where Puz was, yeah, you'd like to have – there's a third player that's over to his side to help him out. You know, but those plays like that, Puz is covered. Benjamin did a good job. It was actually a check at the line of scrimmage based on the look that we had. So give Phillip Rivers some credit there. But, you know, those plays we're capable of making. And I'm not going to say that a linebacker won't be on a receiver again like that because it can happen. But we just got to play it with tighter coverage. And really, it's the rush and coverage all works together. The back end, the linebackers, and the cover, you know, has to get to the quarterback.
It's amazing when you play a quarterback of the caliber of Phillip Rivers or Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I mean, if you have just a small little mistake, he's going to exploit it, and he's going to take advantage of it. And that's always the challenge when you face those great quarterbacks, isn't it?
Well, it comes up to, you know, Phillip Rivers is a great quarterback. Some of those plays, it was about us. You know, when you voided a guy in a zone coverage, and I don't want to make it sound like there was 28 busts in the game. There's busts that happen throughout the league. If you watch a game, you'll see some guys that are running open and somebody's not on them. We just did it at critical times. Yeah. And that's where it came back to get us. And, you know, when you have a third and long situation and you can get off the field and get the offensive ball in good field position and you don't, and there's a bust that allows a touchdown to happen, those consistency type plays, you know, you got to be on it. And especially with the precision type of quarterback that you're facing in Phillip Rivers, that will make you pay for those mistakes.
When you look at the third down numbers, a lot of people say, well, the Jaguars have to be better on third down. But, you know, wait a minute, there's two downs that happen before third down right. That you got to win at to where you can have greater success on third down. I mean, right now, you know, your rankings-wise, offensively and defensively for third down percentage is not very good. But if you're better on first and second down and you're on schedule, both offensively and defensively, third down will follow, correct?
Sure. You know what? We say, you know, win on third down by winning on first and second down. You know, we've talked to our players in terms of that, and that's just about consistency, staying on schedule, do the things right. Let's, you know, get it to third and manageable situations if we don't get a first down on first and second down. But, you know, right now offensively, we have, we did a self-scout. The number of third and 10 pluses that we're dealing with offensively is far too high. And, you know, your percentage of getting a first down on third and 13, third and 14 drops considerably compared to a third and 4, third and 5. And we're just in those too many situations. Third and 10 plus, you know, it's getting close to double digits so far in two games. And that's what we got to avoid. And it starts on first and second down.
How many penalties contributed to that, you know, getting to that third and 10 plus?
Well, you know, you look at there are 13 penalties. And I think I put 8 that were foolish type penalties, things that are in our control. They're all in our control, but the non-aggressive ones. So, you know, a lot of them, the holding calls, the false starts, when I talk about penalties, sometimes the best teams in the league have a lot of penalties. But the one thing is not only foolish penalties, but offensive penalties. Offensive penalties, you know, that's when
those are the hard ones.
Yeah, those are the hard ones. And I think we had 3, but they were at critical times. And, you know, when you're starting a series on the, you know, first and 10 or first and 15 on your own 15-yard line, that's a tough hole to get out of. We've got to be mentally tough to get out of that. We've got to be mentally tough not to put ourselves in those positions.
I remember coming to the locker room after the game. We do the post-game interview after the game. And I said, you know, hey, this is, you know, a tough loss and one that's going to be shared by the offense and the defense. And you were quick to chime in, special teams as well.
It is, you know, because the special teams the week before did such a good job with the field position. Couple backed up situations really forced Green Bay in some difficult situations, just like we were put in. And we didn't see that by the special teams unit. And we expect it from all three units.
Yeah, well, earlier you had mentioned about how, you know, there were some good performances in this ballgame. Correct me if I'm wrong. Telvin Smith, Brandon Linder. I thought Dante Fowler took some great steps forward. Aside from the 2.0 sacks, you know, I thought his play against the run was very good. And it was good to see Ngakoue get his first NFL sack. I mean, things like that, even though it's kind of hard to look and focus in on that, they happen.
Well, you know, the two outside rushers are doing a good job. You know, when you're going against elite tackles in the league, guys that pass block for a living like San Diego, that's where they make their living, you know, it's always a challenge for young players to come in. But we have seen just from the first game to the second game, those two guys and just how they accelerated their performance. So, and you're right, it's not only versus the pass, versus the run too. They're playing at full speed, high motors, and they're doing, you know, a lot of disruptions taking place. Guy like Telvin Smith has been more consistent for us. Jonathan Cyprian, you know, I think having him down in the box more, you know, when you look at the total tackles, he's in, you know, close to that double
fumble
digits.
Fumble recovery as well.
So, you know, there are some good signs right there. That's what I say. You know, we just didn't play up to our capabilities. It doesn't define us one game. We know we're a talented team that can play much better. And now we got to put it to work on Sunday.
How was your team on Monday coming in to deal with that? And then most importantly, how was your team yesterday and today dealing with that?
Well, you know, Monday, you're always looking for answers, man. You're trying to find out what took place, and you know that you went through a storm. And, you know, that's why it's so important to get back in there, watch it on Monday, meet with your coaches, see exactly what took place, and state the truth. That was the hard truth. But, you know, our players are unbelievable. I just wish everybody could see them, just their work ethic, how they approach things, you know, coming in the weight room on off days. I mean, no one wants to get it right more than them. And that's why I have so much confidence in them.
All right, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll return and talk a little bit of the injury report with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues along with Jeff Lagerman here and the head coach Gus Bradley, and we're going to look ahead to the Ravens. In fact, this Sunday's Jaguars-Ravens game is presented by the Hanania Auto Group. And the Ravens come into town. It's a 1 o'clock kick, right? I want to make sure that I got that right. It's a 1 o'clock kick against the Baltimore Ravens. And before we get to the Ravens, more importantly, the health of your football team. I know that during Sunday's game, what happened to Kelvin Beachum, I hate to say this, I had flashbacks. I mean, Dennis Byrd breaking his neck on the field in New York. And that was the first thought that came to my mind because he's not moving and he's on the turf. You went out there immediately. Looked like that he was out. From the replay that we finally did see, you know, the defender's kind of jumping over, just hits him on the head, and it looks fairly harmless. But, you know, that's amazing that some of those little hits like that to the head from a knee or a foot can have that kind of impact on a player.
You know, I don't think we realize just how impactful some of these hits are. You know, when you're standing on the sideline and, you know, it happens in front of you, like the Denard Robinson one that, you know, took place just by the goal line. You know, some of these hits are vicious. So, you know, it hit him right at the right place, you know, wrong place, I should say. But, you know, he came back. He stayed overnight there. He flew back and just had a chance to visit with them. He's in great spirits and feeling really good.
Did not practice yesterday, did not practice today, in the doctor's hands, right?
It really is. You know, he's in the concussion protocol, so we'll see how it goes through the whole week and how he handles it. And there's so many steps that you have to pass, and, you know, he's right in the middle of that right now.
Allen Robinson did not practice yesterday, illness, practice today. He okay?
Yeah, he had the flu, a little brief stint of it, and battled through it today. So, yeah, he should be in good shape.
I heard there's a pretty good little bug going around. I got a couple friends of mine that got it, and they said it's wicked.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly what strain he had or if it was, you know, I think it was strep or something along that lines, but he's doing much better today.
The one that was kind of surprising, I mean, I saw you when I walked in, and all of a sudden Brandon Linder's on the injury report with a knee, which he was not listed yesterday. What happened?
Well, this morning, you know, that he went in the training room and they took a look at him, and Doc Kaplan take a look at him. So, you know, we'll see with him with his knee. He's day-to-day. You know, we'll see what it's like for tomorrow. I know I just saw him, you know, right before I came in and did the show, and he was feeling better. So that will be more of a day-to-day just to see how tight he is, how stiff he is. But from where he was, I guess, this morning when I saw him to this afternoon, much improved.
Prince Amukamura last week did not play because of the hamstring, did not practice this week yet with a hamstring, and then all of a sudden now you got Devon House on there, all of a sudden two corners with hamstrings.
Right. Well, with Prince, I think that will be day-to-day. We'll see. I know he's doing, you know, he'll do more running tomorrow. It'll be in a controlled environment. So we'll see how he handles that. And with Devon House, I think the arrow's more up for him. I think he just had a little bit of tightness. Again, we'll see how he comes through tomorrow for us.
With Beeson's injury, the potential of maybe making some changes on the left side are pretty obvious. And I know you mentioned that, you know, you've got some possibilities, plan A, plan B, plan C, and I'm sure there's probably not many beyond that just because you don't have a lot of guys on the roster. But either way, the commitment to the run game still got to be there, right, for your football team?
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, with the combination we come up with, you know, we're fortunate that these guys have worked together. And they've worked together in training camp. And got a lot of preseason game work done. So, you know, especially early in the season against the Jets. So, you know, I feel very confident whoever it is, if those guys come back, then we'll go with that. If we have to give some other guys opportunities, usually when guys get an opportunity like that, they really stand up. So, you know, we'll see as the week goes on where we're at on Saturday, and then we'll make our decision on Sunday.
Now, I've had this question I don't know how many times, and I think you could probably – it'd be a question for both sides of the ball. Why isn't the running game working, and why aren't you guys doing a better job stopping the run? And people ask me that because they want, okay, it's this guy's fault.
Right.
You know, they want one name. You know, they want one name or they want two names, and then all of a sudden then they feel better.
Well, okay. I think sometimes I'm cautious of giving stats out because it can look poorly. But I think what San Diego had, 35 carries for 150 yards, something like that. They had three carries, which were, what, over 40 yards apiece, I think. That's where it's unacceptable. They might have an explosive run for 12 or 13 yards, but when they have three for over 40 yards, that's where, you know, that's challenging. Now, what happened the other 32 carries? You know, the other 32 carries, it was about 3 yards a rush. Well, we're not giving ourselves enough chance to get those big gains because we're only running the ball 7-8 times. Mm-hmm. And you got to have more attempts. You got to get up to where you're 25, 30 attempts, and to be able to stick with it and be in a situation where the game is manageable, where you can stick with it to where all of a sudden the third and fourth quarter you're running the ball, those 3 yard runs, they turn into 12 yard runs and 15 yard runs because you're wearing the defense out a little bit. We just haven't been put in that position. So sometimes you may see it early where it's a 3 yard gain, a 4 yard gain. We understand that. It's the longevity, getting up there 25, 30 carries to where you can wear a defense out to allow those longer yardage runs to come.
Okay, with the running game, Chris Ivory, I'm looking at his name on the injury report, limited yesterday, full go today.
Yeah, he went out there, and you know, we're still monitoring how many reps he gets. He went out there, and the, you know, the course that we had set for him, he did a good job. So we'll take a look at it and see how he feels as each day goes on. The conditioning will be a factor, to see where he is at that. But you know, everything points good for him.
Yeah, but a lot of people say, well, when Chris Ivory's back, everything's okay. I mean, everybody else still has to get better.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
It is. And again, it goes into where you have a situation where you can run the ball, keep the defense guessing, 50-50 situations, and then you just stay committed to the run and get those explosive runs the more that you do it. And we got to put ourselves in those positions. We got to earn our opportunities to do that.
That's amazing in that, you know, you want it to be simplified because football is a fairly simple game. But when you try to break it down as to and give the reasons why, so it's not, sometimes it's not just one thing. It could be the penalties. It could be the number of times you rush. It could be, you know, the performance of individuals. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into success or lack of success.
Well, you're right, Logs, but there's no excuse either. We've got to come out and we've got to establish a run. It's something that we preached all during training camp, and we get into the season and we're committed to it. And, you know, when you're down 21 to nothing or 28 nothing or 35 to nothing, it's hard to stay committed to it when you're trying to put up points in a hurry. But, you know, I think we got to, you know, make sure that we start off strong, stay on schedule, and stay committed to it and believe in it. Our heart and soul is committed to the run. We want to get into those situations because we feel like we got two good backs and an offensive line that can do it. We just got to continue to stay committed to it.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk about some matchups against the Baltimore Ravens right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this segment is brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Jeff Loggeman, the head coach, Gus Bradley. The Baltimore Ravens come to town, and let's start with their offense. Mark Trestman is their offensive coordinator. He took over for Gary Kubiak last year. And even though Mark Trestman kind of has a little bit of a history that he likes to throw the football, John Harbaugh's the head coach. And in that division, you've got to be able to run the football with the weather and everything else. So Mark Trestman, even I remember last year there was a couple of times where I think John had to kind of say, hey, you know, we run the football here in Baltimore. That's what they want to do is run the ball.
There's no doubt. That's what they want to establish. I mean, if it was up to them, they would get us in 50-50 situations where we're thinking run, and then Mark Trestman can do his thing and throw the deep ball. And you know, I say they take their shots, but he does a really good job with the intermediate passing game, the quick game, the boots, the roll passes. So they mix it up quite a bit. But, you know, they'd like to establish that run in the play pass. That's where they get some shots, and that's where they've gotten some points on the board.
Yeah, I'm looking at their numbers as far as how effective they are in the running game. They've had 54 attempts, averaging 3 yards a carry. So, I mean, it's not overpowering numbers by any stretch. But nonetheless, 54 carries in two games, that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're over that 20-25 range, you know, that's a good sign for an offense. But, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt they want to establish the running game, and they want to get it going. And, you know, if they can do that and keep it 50-50 throughout the whole game, that's a good sign. Obviously, we want to make them one-dimensional.
Yeah, and they've got on their offensive line, on their depth chart, they had John Urschel as a starting left guard, but he was actually inactive the first two games. So the left side of their offensive line are rookies, and kind of surprising. You know, not many teams go with two rookies on one side of the line. You've got Ronnie Stanley, the first-round pick, Notre Dame at left tackle, and then a fourth-round pick, Alex Lewis from Nebraska, starting at left guard, and then you get to Jeremy Zuda at center. And then the right side of the offensive line is more veteran, and they got one heck of a right guard in Marshall Yanda. So kind of a little bit of both along the offensive line. Veteran, young, you know, experienced, raw.
Right, and their left tackle now, he's the real deal. You know, I think he does a good job for him. He's going to play a long time in this league and does a great job for him. But you're right, the workhorse, the guy that really is the whole mentality of the offensive line is Yanda. You know, he plays with great toughness, you know, played for a long year, a lot of years, great wisdom, and provides that for some of that youth on the left side.
Yeah, he had his fifth consecutive Pro Bowl last year, pretty good player. Joe Flacco, his record is simply amazing. He comes in and he's got a great defense. Ray Lewis is on the football team, 87-52 overall, very impressive for a quarterback. Last year, he tore his ACL. He did it. I think it was week 11. So it's not like he's had a full year to recoup. He's still kind of in that recuperation process. How has he looked on film in the first two games? They played Buffalo in week one and then Cleveland in week two.
Right. I think, you know, from the first week to the second week, you're starting to see him become more confident with that knee. I mean, he stands in the pocket. He takes shots. He, you know, has great accuracy, good decision making, all those qualities. You don't see him quite out of the pocket as much as he was in the past. But from the first game to the second game, even more. So we anticipate seeing him being more comfortable. And sometimes it's in those challenging positions where you do see him move out of the pocket. You know, when you're expecting to, you know, a heavy run defense to run a boot here or there just to keep the defense off schedule. But primarily in the pocket.
He's always been good, too, of staying in the pocket and then getting rid of the ball, avoiding sacks, et cetera. And I think he probably might be, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, I see him being more aware of that now to avoid contact, to get rid of the ball even quicker than what he's done in the past.
He does. And, you know, they'll set up their play passes where it'll be intermediate routes. And then when they take their shots, it'll be some max protection, you know, to give him time to, you know, get set up and to throw the long ball. But, you know, he plays with such good poise. I think ever since his rookie year, he's played with poise. And he handles pressure very well, and he makes good decisions for him.
Does he throw the prettiest deep ball in the league?
He does. He knows how to put the air underneath it and give the receivers a chance to run underneath it and make plays. So he's got some very good speed on the perimeter, which will be a great challenge for us with our corners outside.
Last 2 years, he has not had his tight end, Dennis Pitta. Dennis Pitta dislocated his hip twice, I guess. Missed the last 2 years completely. He's back in the lineup this year. And he is, he had 9 catches for 102 yards last week against the Cleveland Browns. Is he back to being the Dennis Pitta of old?
He is. You know, and when you watch third downs, you see I think he's the most targeted receiver on third downs, or, you know, one of them. And he's always been a favorite of Joe's to get the ball to critical times, critical situations, or when he's under pressure. So we have to have a good awareness where he is on the field and, you know, how we're going to, you know, make sure that we have defenders around him or near him to take some of those throws away.
Steve Smith Sr. on the outside, I believe in his 16th year, still playing very well, highly competitive, and he was kind of the one-man show last year prior to his injury. He had an Achilles. This year they've added Mike Wallace, and we talked about Joe Flacco's ability to throw a beautiful deep ball. Mike Wallace, under Ben Roethlisberger, that's what he was. Mike Wallace ran deep, Ben threw it up, and touchdowns happened. Bounced around a little bit with the Miami Dolphins and the Minnesota Vikings, and now he's with the Ravens, and he's got 3 touchdowns, which actually is tied for the NFL lead. Is he back to showing some of the form that he had in Pittsburgh?
He is, you know, a great speed threat on the outside, and that's where, you know, sometimes you might have to play some split safety. You see, you know, for us, whatever our philosophy going in the game, but when you watch other teams, they're playing some split safety, making sure they have a safety over the top, and that's where the tight end becomes now an issue. You know, and that's why he's got so many catches. So I think that you got to play really good on the perimeter. Understand that they like the tight end if the perimeter shots aren't there. And so they have a wide variety of weapons that you have to be aware of.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll flip it over to the other side of the ball and talk the Ravens defense with the head coach right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. We might have a special guest on. Can we get him on?
Yeah, I know, huh? I mean, he's talking big back
he's
there.
He's talking very big, and we've offered to get him out here in front of the cameras.
JP's got him humbled a little bit, huh?
JP Shadrick is in the house as well. We got a kind of a little live audience here for the Gus Bradley Show. All right, enough of those guys. By the way, Joe Fortunato is also – can we get Joe on camera? I don't even know if we have the ability to turn the cameras around because he's like a mini celebrity in Jacksonville. There we go. We got him on camera. Okay, good. All right, now we can get back to the Gus Bradley Show. All right, the Ravens defense. When I think of Ravens defense, I think of what was built going all the way back to their Super Bowl year in 2000. And even though – a lot of those guys, if not all of them, are all gone. But that mentality, that toughness is still there in Baltimore.
It is, and it starts right up front. I mean, they've got two guys in the middle that are playing very well, you know, and then on the perimeter, guys like Suggs, and then you look at like a guy like Eric Weddle. I think he's brought another dimension to their team that they didn't have last year, and I think he's already got an interception this year, you know, and you see him roaming around, you know, quite a bit and give some different looks to him. So they're playing very well as far as the points category, limited Buffalo to, you know, to a few points. And then last week, Cleveland jumped up, but they calmed down after that. But the very stout defense, ranked very high as far as total statistics throughout the league.
Well, and right now they're number two in the National Football League in total defense. And you had mentioned about the middle. Are you talking about Brandon Williams, the nose tackle, and then C.J. Mosley, the middle linebacker?
Right. You know, and it's through the middle where you have to be stout as a defense and to have those two guys. But their whole defensive line, I think they're excited about this young rusher on the other side. You know, but Mosley is a guy that makes a lot of tackles. He's always listening at the top of the tackling chart. And, you know, he's a real good playmaker for him.
And once again, a 3-4 defense. Is that good to have carryover from week to week? And are they similar enough to where there is carryover?
There is, you know, but every 3-4 team's a little bit different in how they stunt and how they move their guys and, you know, who drops at certain times and what's the percentages. So, but your base fundamental rules, your base fundamental blocking principles are there. You adjust each week based on how their looks and the looks they give you in the back end. But, you know, similar principles.
Terrell Suggs, when I think of toughness in the Ravens defense now, you know, it used to be Ray Lewis. Now I think of Terrell Suggs. Is he playing still at a high level? He's come back from, I believe, he tore his Achilles last year.
Yeah. You know, he is. You know, we saw him earlier this week, Logs. You and I were watching him, how he sets the edge, and he's just a disruptor versus the run. And he plays at a high level. I know he's getting up there in age, but it hasn't slowed him down. And I think the whole defense really responds well to him. He's a guy that when he plays, he uplifts everybody around him. And, you know, and as a rusher, you always got to be aware of where he is.
107.5 career sacks by Suggs. And it was interesting watching him. We did a little piece that we're going to be showing for the weekend show, Jaguars Weekend. And then also I pulled a clip from him for Jaguars Film Room Friday. And it was the same type of play that he's defensing, to where he's a stand-up outside linebacker, and here comes the counter his way. The first time, he literally blows up all three guys that are trying to block on the front side coming from the backside. The next time, they try to do the same thing, and he does the old ole and goes right around them and makes the tackle in the backfield.
Right. You know, when those edge setters, you know, the guys that are saying that, that take on the block the same way every time, now it's just a matter of you against him. But for him, he sets up so many things the way he plays it. He'll set the edge, and then he'll go around it, and then he'll get upfield, and then he'll wrong arm it. And so you're never quite sure when you do attack the perimeter, attack the edge, what you're going to get from him. And that's that years of playing experience. You know, he knows enough techniques, enough fundamentals that work for him, and, you know, he plays up to his strengths.
You talked about the safety, Eric Weddle. And much like Tashaun Gibson, it's kind of hard to evaluate sometimes whether a safety is playing well or he's not playing well. Based on watching the film on Eric Weddle, what does he still do at a high level that gained him the reputation that he had in San Diego?
Well, he's got great football awareness. You know, he can see a formation, understand what a team's trying to do, play it accordingly. They give him that freedom because of the trust that they have in him. But he'll play in the back end. He'll be a middle third player. He'll be a quarters player. He'll be down in the box. So, I mean, he plays a lot of different techniques, still utilize him in all different areas. Every once in a while, he'll bring pressure as far as blitzing. But he's just got a great savvy about him, and I think they feel really confident with him back there.
And the job that they were able to do against the Buffalo Bills in week one, they held the Bills to 160 total yards of offense. People may wonder, how can they end up being the number two defense in the league? Well, when you only give up 160 out of two games that you've played, it's not very hard to get to a very high ranking.
Right, and they did a good job against Buffalo. Buffalo tried to run the ball, tried to establish it with LeSean McCoy and the quarterback, Taylor. But, you know, they just a very disciplined team. They had the same defensive coordinator for many years now, and they understand their scheme, how they want to play things. They might give up some plays, but they're going to try to limit some of the explosive plays.
All right, when we take a break on the other side, we'll come back and open up the phone lines. If you'd like to get in, 904-355-6351. or if you're outside the call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL1. If you'd like to talk to the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And we are joined again by the head coach here for a couple more segments of the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, this week, before we take the phone lines, by the way, people want to get in, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1. The Ravens special teams, Rick Goslin, who writes for the Dallas Morning News, ranks special teams in the National Football League, and I think he uses about 22 different categories for the rankings. And last year, the Ravens were I don't remember exactly what they were. They were top five. But nonetheless, four out of the last 5 years, they've been in the top five. Pretty impressive.
It is. And it talks about their back end of their roster. You know, not only they got really quality players in the front end, the guys that are playing, you know, 60, 70 snaps on offense and defense, but also those special teams players. Play a lot of football for them, and they're very well coached in all the phases. We talk about four core players. They've got multiple four core players, and they do a good job now with the addition of a guy like Devin Hester.
Yeah, they were actually number one last year in special teams ranking, which is very impressive. I mean, a 5-11 football team still have a number one ranked special teams. That's not easy to do.
No, it isn't. And Jerry's been there for a long time coaching their special teams.
And their head coach cut his teeth in special teams. John Harbaugh,
that's right.
I don't know how many years he was a special teams coordinator, but one of the, I think maybe the first, was he not the first head coach in the National Football League that came from a special teams background?
Yeah, you know, and I gave a lot of the special team coaches around the league a hope, you know, that they can work for them too.
All right, we got Kevin here on the Gus Bradley Show. Good evening, Kevin.
Hey, Logs. Hey, Coach. How are you guys doing this evening?
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing?
Everything's fantastic. Coach, got to tell you, first and foremost, love you and Michaela and all the great things you do in our community and for charities and all that, and that covers that. But just curious, Coach, if you had – I'm certain you already have your playlist already planned out for this week, but just curious if you had given thought to your no-huddle option, because it seems to me that – and I'm not telling you how to do your job, but it just seems to me that Blake Bortles excels when he's moving a little quicker.
Right. You know what? And we've talked about that, to have a more of a high-tempo offense. And the tempo can change. The tempo might be where you get up to the line of scrimmage with a lot of clock, so he gets a lot of looks, or like a two-minute no-huddle. And, you know, we talked about it last week. We went to it, and, you know, for a phase there in the game. And, you know, I think we are searching for things that try to stimulate our players offensively. And that's something that we have, and we have in our back pocket, and something that we've dove into a little bit this week. So, you know, I think tempo plays a big part of it.
And it's not something that you want to talk about too much.
No.
I mean, you don't want to tell the Ravens, hey, we're running no huddle this week, change the tempo up.
No, I think they understand, you know, with us that, you know, tempo is important. We've talked about that all during training camp. So, but just the different styles of tempo, and each game is different, how your players are responding, and that's the tempo. We kind of have an idea, our best tempo, and we need to get back to that.
All right, let's take a break, and maybe we'll get back to the phone lines if you'd like to get in. 355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1. And we'll talk to you right after this break here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And we'll continue it on and go to the phone lines and talk to Alan at the beach. Good evening, Alan. We got you, Alan?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Alan. You're on with the head coach.
How you doing, Alan?
Hey, Coach. Doing good, man. You guys are doing a fantastic job, and thank you all for having me on.
Sure.
I just have two questions, and it's kind of a two-part question, and I'll take it off the line. But my question is, I know your accomplishments, and you came from Seattle, and you did a great job, and you're here as a head coach, and accolades, total accolades. My question is, Greg Olsen, I'm not sure where he came from. I didn't do the research, and I apologize. But some of his calls have been questionable based on what I've heard on comments on 1010. So my question to you would be, how involved are you with that? And B, can we fix it? Can we not throw passes behind the line of scrimmage and let's go five and out and let them get yak, you know, the yards after the catch, first of all. And then second of all would be on second and 10 or third and 10, let's go down the field. If they don't catch the ball, maybe we'll get a pass interference, you know. I don't know, and I'll turn it over to you.
I think it's good comments. You know, ideally you do want to throw it downfield. You know, when it's third and 10 or third and 8, we pride ourselves in that you want to throw the ball past the sticks. Your completion on third and 10 might go down a little bit when you throw it past the sticks compared to underneath, but your chances for getting the first down are higher. So, you know, those things all come in the analytics, and we're aware of those things. I think sometimes when you see it thrown to the back, it might be through a hot or, you know, a certain pressure. The quarterback read takes them to him. But that's not design. We look at it, you know, TJ Yeldon's caught a lot of balls. That's not what our plan is. We've got other threats that we'd like to get the ball to. And Greg does a good job with that. And, you know, so, you know, I think I have a lot of faith in him. He's coached at many places and has done a good job with quarterbacks coming up in the NFL, like a Carr, like a Drew Brees, and developing them. And he's done a great job with Blake Bortles. So we'll get it going. We got to get that run game going. And you bring up some valid points as far as down the field throws. That's very important to us. That was part of our personality last year, and we don't want to get too far away from it.
I think the interesting question to me is how involved are you know, with the offensive side of the ball? And most defensive coaches kind of get involved to give the other perspective and looking at the offense, right?
Right, and that's what we do. You know, I'm in with the defense quite a bit, and then but I always go over to the offense, and Ole and I talk about philosophy and how we want to go about doing it in certain situations and be ready for fourth downs and third downs and really throughout the whole game. But that our whole offensive staff, there's a lot of wisdom over there, a lot of experience, and it starts with Greg. And, you know, just talk to Blake Bortles, talk to the offensive players. They hold him in such high regard, and just the way he attacks defenses, you know, I'm very much in favor of it.
All right, well, let's take a break. We're a little early, but I want to save some room on the other side because it was a big weekend this past weekend somewhere up in Iowa, and it's a big weekend in Jacksonville this week. I want to get your thoughts on the NFL Play 60, and we'll do that with the head coach right after this right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, saw you in the hotel the day before the game because Saturday morning, I believe the game started about 11:30. Big win for the North Dakota State Bison. Traveled to Iowa, and Iowa was a ranked opponent. And I remember I watched the first quarter and a half, maybe something like that. And I remember watching the first couple series. I said, this Bison football team looks like it belongs. And at the end, they ended up pulling out a victory.
You know, they did a great job. We were actually at our walkthrough. So when I got back to the hotel, it was with like a minute left to go in the game. So, yeah, it was exciting. The players, were watching it and, you know, in the lobby. And Todd Wash and Scotty Hazleton, the coaches that were at North Dakota State. So, huge
win. Were they students there as well?
Todd Wash played there and coached there. Scotty Hazleton coached there. Yeah, so they've got some ties there. But, yeah, that program's on a roll right now. And that's a big win for Fargo, big win for the university, and really the state of North Dakota.
23-21 victory at Iowa. The next game for the Bison. Is it Bison or Bison?
Bison.
Bison.
Yeah, I know.
For the Bison. is October 1st versus Illinois State. So it's kind of nice to have an extra week to kind of, I guess you could say, recover from the victory.
Sure. How about Virginia, Logs?
So good, Gus. kind of the opposite of your Bison. The Virginia Cavaliers traveled to UConn, and in the last second they had an opportunity to kick a 20-yard field goal to tie it up and send it in overtime. And the kicker missed it.
I saw it was 13-10. Or
yeah, they lost. You know,
now that you brought it up, and I knew that we were going to be talking about that.
You did a little research.
When I see the scores, I pay more attention to that game now.
Yeah, so we're on the flip side of things. The Bison are 3-0, and the Cavaliers are 0-3. This weekend at EverBank, the NFL has this thing called the NFL Play 60, and they're encouraging kids to play 60 minutes a day. And as a kid, you growing up, you played sports and everything else, but it didn't have to be organized sports, did it?
No, it didn't. You know, at play 60, I think when we grew up, it was a lot longer. We would leave the house early in the morning and play all day. And it seems like we've gotten away from that. So I think it's great that the NFL is so involved in this and has set it up. The kids are really responding to it. And then to have the games, you know, on our field, what a great event. I know Jason Babin, a former player of ours, his son is going to be playing in that game. So, you know, it's a great event for him. It gives him a great experience.
All right, thank you, Gus. Best of luck this weekend.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll join everybody next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show. Same time, same place.